And as counsel is getting settled, we'll call the second case. It's case number A250075, Linda Holper versus City of Gilman. Good morning to both counsel. You will each be given 15 minutes for your argument. Appellant, you will have the opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. The podium can be adjusted for your comfort. As a reminder, we are live streaming this argument. There will be an audio recording that will be made that will be available on the website within 24 hours. And finally, before you begin your argument, please identify your name and the party that you represent. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you. Tyler Adams on behalf of appellant plaintiff Linda Holper. I begin by noting we're here on appeal from summary judgment in a sewer negligence case alleging negligence on the part of a municipal body. The district court granted summary judgment in favor of the defendant on the basis of applying statutory municipal immunity to plaintiff's claims. Now, I begin the assessment of what this case is about by going to the complaint, because what the case is about has, you know, for better or for worse, seemingly caused a measure of confusion on the part of the district court. So when I look specifically at the allegations in the complaint, or suppose the legal theory set forth in the complaint, it says, defendant owes plaintiff a duty of care to take reasonable measures to maintain its sewer system, not only to allow plaintiff to use a public utility, but to prevent that utility from causing damage to plaintiff's property. That's in paragraph 28. Then in paragraph 30, it says, defendant's breach of its duty of care to adequately maintain its sewer system constitutes a failure in operational conduct for which statutory municipal immunity does not apply. And that is very carefully selected language because it comes almost directly from the case of Gindra versus City of St. Anthony, where the rule, as articulated in that case, as it pertains to municipal immunity and sewer negligence cases, is that where a city's lack of maintenance causes an obstruction that in turn creates damage to a citizen's property, recovery will be allowed. Now, in this particular case, that creates a seeming tension with other authority, both on which the district court relied, but also that is noted in the briefing, but not necessarily directly relied upon by the district court. Specifically, I'm talking about the case of Christofferson versus City of Albert Lea, where this court opined that where a case pertains to or challenges a city's, quote, decisions with respect to how to maintain its sewer system is a planning level decision. And so I think what this case presents is a seeming tension between those seemingly competing rules, where on the one hand, where lack of maintenance can sustain a negligence operation, but on the other hand, it seems like any financial or policy-making decisions regarding maintenance or potentially the lack thereof could be protected.
So, I mean, we do have clear evidence that in 2020, the city took into consideration economic and financial factors and made decisions about whether and how to repair the sewer system and how it would be maintained in the future, or at least in the near future. So why isn't that enough to put it into the bucket of policy level decisions, not an operational decision?
There are two reasons why. One is based off of a legal analysis, and the other is based off of a logical policy analysis. I think the first is that with respect to negligence claims, all negligence claims, including in the context of sewer negligence, are based off of four elements: duty, breach, causation, and damages. So when we speak about the application of municipal immunity or policymaking decisions, what we're talking about is the first element, the duty. What is the duty that the city has? And respectfully, the district court in this case, as well as potentially, you know, in other cases when we think about the types of decisions that are made, the district court identified one specific policy decision specifically with respect to whether or not to repair, or I guess the exact language in the decision was the decision not to replace its sewer system. was a policymaking financial decision, and that is consistent with what appears in the case it cited, Shabbat, in the Shabbat case versus Sauk Rapids. But the duty of care that we're talking about, and this is why I started by talking about the complaint, it cannot contradict the general rule that where a city's lack of maintenance causes or creates an obstruction. In other words, both the application of statutory immunity and the specific policy decisions that are being considered has to be read consistently with that rule, because Christofferson might have some insight into the court's question on this, where it says, you know, whether if the relevant conduct at issue involves a combination of policymaking and operational decisions. In other words, the financial ramifications of how to maintain its sewer system, then what we end up with is a circumstance where it becomes impossible for the city to have any duty of care. In other words, the city, if it has broad blanket authority to say that for financial reasons we are not going to do any maintenance of its sewer system, that would basically counteract and would effectively overturn Gindra versus City of St. Anthony.
I mean, I don't think we have a record where there's no maintenance being done on the sewer system, do we?
Yes, we do. Oh, yes, we do. In fact, every witness that was deposed on this part of the city admitted that there is no maintenance at all being conducted. And there is also no evidence of any city of any meeting minutes where a maintenance procedure or policy was discussed. The only financial decision that the defendant cited and that the district court cited was with respect to whether or not to replace its sewer system. And this, I think, is the critical, in my mind, the critical error that the district court made. The plaintiff's claim here is saying that the lack of maintenance is what caused the obstruction. Now, the relevance of the decision and the policy decision-making that might have gone into whether or not to replace the system, that is relevant because when we, again, going back to the elements, in the specific context of sewer negligence claims, in order to establish that a duty of care existed, the plaintiff has to prove and has to establish that the city had notice of a condition or had reasonable notice of a specific condition. And that exists, you know, for an extreme example, there would be no liability if a freak earthquake, you know, destroyed the sewer system because a city can't be said to have notice of that possibility. However, the case law says that notice in the context for establishing a duty of care can be either actual or constructive. And this is why the planning level decisions that the court references, the preliminary engineering reports that came before the city, this is why it is relevant for purposes of establishing that a duty of care existed because the city had notice. Now, what ended up happening here, the district court took that evidence of the application for purposes of the duty element and assumed and applied it to the causation and the breach element. In other words, the district court concluded that the plaintiff intended to show that the city breached its duty of care by way of not adopting that proposed preliminary engineering report. And that is not what the case is about. That's not what the complaint says, and that is not, for the policy reasons I mentioned
before.
Does
it really matter what the district court, how the district court decided the issue since we're reviewing it de novo?
Well, when we say reviewing it de novo, I still think it's worth going over the error in the district court's reasoning. Because you're right, it's not an abuse of discretion standard. However, I think the district court's error here is understandable, and it helps guide the correct analysis that I'm going over here, which is laying out the negligence elements, identifying what evidence is needed to establish each element, and then correctly applying the evidence according to those elements. So I guess
Judge Bond's question, isn't the record before us that the city didn't have the funds to fully replace the system? So it decided to use a complaint-based system where the city employee would do daily monitoring of the flow and would, you know, weekly monitoring of water levels, and had done a couple things like replacing lift station and jet cleaning the sewer pipes over the years. So why wouldn't that be a policy-level decision that would be allowable for purposes of the immunity that ultimately, I mean, if the district court's ultimate decision that immunity applies, why is that error?
Right. So, and so it, yes and no as far as what the record establishes. As far as the jet cleaning, that was not part of any particular maintenance procedure that occurred because and in contemplation of the one preliminary investigation report. But with respect to the broader question, you know, why hypothetically wouldn't a decision to do the particular style or complaint-based system, why is that inadequate as a matter of law? Well, the fact of the matter is that in this specific context is a fact question. And the reason why is because the question has to do with what exactly was the duty that was owed. And in this particular context, that is a fact question. And Chabot actually expressed a measure of concern over this exact question when it opined that, well, the exact burden that is being imposed upon municipalities here is not clear. In other words, there is no bright line rule as a matter of law that says this is the precise amount of maintenance that is due and owing, this is the precise duty that any municipal body owes to its citizens. And the reasons why, in a way, is demonstrated by all of these cases, because that's going to change depending on the context. So Christofferson versus Albert Lea, for example, it contemplated a much larger city that already had a certain existing stormwater infrastructure, and it would be one thing for a city with tens of thousands of residents to say we're not going to do anything with respect to the maintenance procedure. We're not going to conduct any maintenance at all. We're not going to have anyone who has any specific duty with respect to that larger, more complex system. But that could be different if it's applied to, say, the city of Gilman that only has, say, a few hundred residents. You know, so the question of whether, as a matter of law, a city's actions with respect to the exercise of its duty of care, as well as what that duty of care is under the particular circumstances, is a fact question in this particular context.
Counsel, can I interrupt? What is the status of, I haven't heard you talk today, and I don't think the district court's order addressed what may be a claim in your complaint alleging potentially negligent actions by the city or the plumber on April 16th, the day of the incident. Is that before us? How do we think about that aspect of the case on the immunity issue in particular?
Well, so the district court's reasoning, and this goes to Judge Eddy's question a little bit as well, the district court's reasoning, from what I understand, was based entirely on its understanding that the plaintiff's negligence theory was that the city breached its duty of care by failing to adopt a preliminary engineering report and replace its sewer system. The district court did not say that as a matter of law there were no fact issues regarding the sufficiency or the adequacy of the city's response to the plaintiff's particular backup. The district court did not make any conclusions about the causation aspect of it, whether or not the particular obstruction may or may not have been caused by the lack of maintenance. So the question of whether this is before the court, sort of not really. The arguments that came forth on summary judgment were not that there were no fact issues with respect to the causation aspect of it. In fact, in my reply brief, I go into some of the fact issues that could potentially support alternative negligence theories. And one could, for instance, find other examples. I know there was one unpublished case that didn't appear in either party's briefing called, I think, Dvorak versus City of Madison, where the plaintiff in their complaint did specify four separate theories of negligence, where For instance, one of the four was specifically that the city breached its duty of care by failing to adopt or failing to replace its sewer system. But then there were alternatives where, you know, they made particular claims saying that the city's response on that specific day amounted to negligence because it breached its duty of care to maintain the system. And also, I think, if I remember correctly, it also had a separate count for negligent lack of maintenance. So to address the court's question, the court's assessment of the record, I suppose you could look at the record on a de novo review and say, yeah, there's no way that the facts could establish negligence, notwithstanding the duty of care issue. But respectfully, I think that's extremely unlikely.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel Jason Kubuschek on behalf of the city of Gilman. I am glad appellant's counsel actually brought up the Dvorak versus City of Madison case. I mean, this is 2019 Westlaw 6698083. Because there's a statement in there by this court in 2019 that I think drives this matter and what and can clarify the confusion raised by appellant's arguments. And there at noted at point five, it says, issues of immunity are generally raised before negligence claims are resolved because official immunity, in that case, relieves the immune actor from not only from liability, but also from having to defend against the claim. And I think the same application is here, that the issues of immunity, in this case, statutory discretionary immunity, apply before we get into the negligence claims. So appellant's arguments really focus upon the elements of negligence. But instead, this case should focus on statutory element or statutory immunity and what's required for that. And I know appellant's counsel talked about the complaint and started off and quoted to the court paragraphs 28 and paragraph 30. What is missing, and which I think is the key paragraph here, is paragraph 29. Because that paragraph sets forth what they believe to be the city's conduct that was violated. And they talked about a breach of duty of care by the city failing to conduct maintenance of its sewer system, failing to rectify known defects in the sewer system, and failing to take adequate measures to remedy the problem with the sewer system upon notification. That's the precise governmental conduct at issue here. Plaintiff put that forth in their complaint. It's what we litigated on through discovery and summary judgment motion. And the facts of the case, the evidence of the case show that, as the court noted, going back to 2020, the city had looked at the sewer system. It had the opportunity to replace the sewer system it knew had been around for a while. It could do a joint project with the county. They went out, they got an engineer. We have the Boley Group report. They have Nelson that went out and jetted and ultimately videotaped the system. And then they have David Drone who went out and ran the numbers. They did the financial aspect of it. And they looked at all pieces of this and ultimately came back that, yep, we recognize the system. It's got some clay tile. It's got some plastic tile in it. There's areas where, you know, they had some blockages on the north side of town, not near plaintiffs in the central or east side, but on the north side. They had a rating done of the tile. They recognized it was in poor condition. But in the same respect, Nelson also told them, you know, as the record reflects, you know, it's in good shape. It's actually surprisingly in good shape.
Counsel, let me, if I could just interrupt you. As far as the engineering study and all of the evidence that you have just recited, it seems clear in relation to that the record establishes that the city took into consideration financial and economic factors. What I don't see in the record is that there were social factors, political factors, some of the other aspects of the test that the case law often talks about as being relevant in determining whether a municipality made a policy-level decision as opposed to operational. Does that Does that matter? What's your position on, you know, to the extent that the record in fact shows that the considerations that went into the city's decision were mostly, if not exclusively, economic, does that matter to the outcome of our immunity decision?
I don't think it does matter, because when I look at, and we quoted the Schrader case in our memo, we talk about statutory immunity, and it's planning level decisions that is social, comma, political, comma, or economic considerations have been evaluated. So it's not, you're not required to do all three. It's one of the three. And certainly, you know, probably not in the record, but had the council said, you know what, town of 215 people, we're going to drop an $8 million project on you, it suddenly becomes very political, because then you're going to have to raise your levy. But truly, the evidence in the record focuses fully upon the economic side of this.
I'm guessing I know what your answer is, but I'm just wondering what the limits of that are. I mean, and I know these aren't our facts, but could the city have looked at the economic considerations and looked at its budget and said it doesn't have funds to even do the complaint-based system, and didn't have funds to do the jet and the videotape, and even though it knew that there were some concerns with the age of the system, it couldn't do anything? And would immunity still apply in a situation like that based purely on economic considerations?
So if I'm understanding the court's question correctly, would the economic considerations or immunity apply if the city kind of did nothing?
Yeah, and I ask this because that seemed to be the flavor of the argument that your counterpart on the other side made, is that essentially the city didn't do anything in terms of maintenance. So let's assume that's the case and that the complaint-based system was not actual maintenance. Would immunity still apply if that was a planning decision made in light of economic considerations?
I think that situation would completely be determinative upon the record. And if there's some reason in the record, for some economic reason, they laid out there's absolutely no possible way we can do any maintenance, there's no possible way we can have anybody on our staff, even part-time, and there's no possible way if we get calls from residents regarding issues with the system, we're not going to respond to it. Again, that's a very hypothetical situation,
yeah.
And it's an extreme one, and I'm not aware of any city in the state that's taken that position. And in fact, many small cities like Gilman have the same thing, you know, a very limited levy. They can't have multiple full-time employees. They have a part-time employee. And, you know, there is evidence in the record talking about, you know, and Councilmember Schomer, when he testified in his deposition, you know, a call comes in. It comes in to, you know, a city council member. It comes in to the mayor. You know, and ultimately we wanted to get to Mr. Strafansky, the maintenance person. Sometimes they call him directly. We're small enough, people might know it. And in this actual case, just by, I don't know if it's luck or unluck, that the city official on site happened to be plaintiff's son, and it was the mayor. He was there, got the call from his brother, and right away, he started calling Mr. Strafansky. He started calling other council members. You know, he was working at this. So the fact that the city didn't do anything isn't accurate, as was alluded to in the facts.
But so in your view, I mean, it's a broad statement of the law when this immunity can apply, as long as there's a record that supports that these things were considered. That's when the immunity applies. It would have to be a situation where there was no consideration at all and the city said, well, we're not going to do anything.
I think for the immunity cases, it is completely based upon the record and what's been developed. I mean, even if you look at the Conlin versus City of St. Paul case that we had, you know, these conclusory affidavits that were used to support immunity defenses were no longer substantial. You know, no longer, you know, the court said that's not enough. We need more in the record. In this record, we do have that. We have the city council decisions. We have the documentation. They evaluated it. You know, even on the jetting, you know, the jetting was tied to the inspection. There's no doubt about it. But the mayor testified, you know, that was done, and we thought within 5 years it was going to be good enough. The condition was fine. We didn't need to do it again. So, you know, that decision not to jet every year was tied into that. You know, they certainly had done it once. They hadn't done it before. It was good. So they went forward with that. So,
Council,
yes.
Ask about the record. What part timing of the record, especially in light of the Supreme Court's DOLO 601, which is kind of what you were just referring to, are implicitly, I assume, that the burdens on the government and conclusory statements of what was decided isn't enough. So and I understand we have deposition testimony of why we didn't do something, but isn't it more important that there be records from specific city council meetings that would clarify that we're going to do a complaint-based sewer system maintenance only because, and then fill in the money and the $50,000 maximum levy, all those sorts of things. Is that what's required, or is it okay if after the event occurs and the depositions say this is why we didn't do it, retrospectively, if you understand my question?
Sure. And I would say, and as the immunity and the evidence to support immunity has evolved, it's more than just, we considered social, political, economic items. You need something more in depth. And you can rely on the depositions after the fact when you've got specific council members, the mayor, even plaintiff who had formerly been the treasurer recognized, there's a limited budget, we had to do this, and in this case, it was complaint-based. We couldn't have someone out there full-time. There's reasons we didn't jet every year. Once we jetted it, it looked clean. We thought we were gonna get the project done, so they hadn't done it prior to this. So I think even though there isn't a specific city council meeting minute saying this, in part because the courts have allowed even unwritten policies to support an immunity decision. So in that respect, the fact the council was aware of, we're going to have complaints, we're going to respond to it, it's going to be kind of this chain, that would be enough based upon case law to support statutory immunity.
Thank you.
We had raised other issues in our brief in opposition. Certainly I know they appealed the judge's summary judgment order. In that order, there was a breach of implied contract claim that had been dismissed. It doesn't appear it's part of this appeal, so we would deem it as waived. And then with regard to the public duty doctrine, the district court didn't get to that. It had ruled on immunity before. I know it had been brief. We would just rely upon our briefs with respect to that position. And with that, we'd ask that the court uphold the district court decision and find statutory immunity applies. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes. Could you start maybe with the your opposing counsel's argument that you're really focusing on the elements of the negligence claim, whereas the question before the court is the more prerequisite question of does statutory discretionary immunity apply?
Sure, and the question speaks to one of both pleading standards and how to construe pleadings. In my brief, I use the phrase misinterpret. The district court misinterpreted the evidence. I guess maybe misconstrued would be a better way to put it. All pleadings are supposed to be construed so as to do substantial justice. They are not to be construed in the way that the defendant wants them to or any specific way. I mean, when counsel says that that's the issue that's been litigated, sure, it's the issue that they litigated. But that doesn't mean that it's the plaintiff's theory, and it doesn't mean that that's the correct analysis for the district court. So with respect to, to what the district court has to assess, I think, opposing counsel got it exactly right. According to the recent Doe decision and all other authority in statutory immunity, it has to begin by identifying the precise government conduct that is being challenged. And in this particular case, at least, the plaintiff's challenge was not to the decision not to replace the sewer system. In fact, it kind of speaks to how Jindra and Christofson and Shabo are distinct from one another. Because Christofson, for example, it distinguished Jindra by saying, well, that case didn't contemplate statutory immunity, and it poses the question, why? Well, because in Jindra, there was no precise government conduct that was being challenged. It was much more broad, and it was a lot simpler. It was simply that the lack of maintenance caused an obstruction. Now, it begs the question, is lack of maintenance, is that precise government conduct? Well, it can't be without effectively overruling Jindra. I think if we were to adopt that exceptionally broad understanding of what can fall into statutory immunity, well, quite frankly, it would kind of defeat any possible negligence liability on the part of municipals. I mean, they could say that they considered financial and all other factors just by virtue of having the notice that is required for them to have. If there's any record that they had notice, period, of a potential condition, well, that could be construed as, well, now they're doing financial planning, and it becomes a catch-22 from the plaintiff's perspective.
Well, so looking at paragraph 29 in your complaint, for instance, the allegation, failing to rectify known defects in the sewer system, isn't that that conduct of the government directly related to its policy-level decision not to repair the sewer system?
It could be, depending on how the complaint is construed, potentially. But that speaks to my point before, where at least under Rule 8, the pleadings are not to be construed. So they're to be construed so as to do substantial justice. And in any case, particularly on summary judgment, where the court is to construe all facts and inferences in the plaintiff's favor, in this particular situation, no. And it's what I was talking about before, as far as what is, you know, what are the fact issues in a case like this? And this is a circumstance where what is reasonable under the circumstances, you know, what constitutes reasonable maintenance, what constitutes, you know, what could constitute efforts to, what could constitute a known defect, what could constitute reasonable efforts to rectify it. All of those are fact issues.
And aren't they fact issues if we were looking at the elements of the negligence claim? And we're not there yet. We're looking at whether, as a matter of law, the municipality's decision is immune from tort liability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the district court at the hearing itself even had a question about this, because you know the question of whether or not statutory immunity applies, it is kind of a mixed question of law and fact in that sense, where the court, again, has to identify the precise conduct being challenged, and it then has to identify a specific policy-making decision framework, the social, economic, political factors that the court referenced before. So, you know, going back to paragraph 29 of the complaint, well, you know, by saying remedy known defects, you know, is that precise government conduct being challenged? Well, according to the way that the pleadings are supposed to be construed and according to the inferences that are supposed to be made at summary judgment, I would say the answer is no. In broad speak, you know, the Christofson and, you know, Chabo, they do not stand for the proposition that if a city has a preliminary engineering report or if it contemplates a major project, it just gets statutory immunity over absolutely all possible negligence claims, no matter what. And that's my time.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your briefing and your argument. This matter is submitted, and we will issue a decision within the statutory timeframe.